Way I will finish this lesson, and that's why you have so much material, because I wrote a lot of it out extra for you. You should have a sheet that says discipline with encouragement. That's the actual lesson. It said notes back there, so you should have that note, and that's about 8 or 9 pages, so you should have that. You should have another sheet that looks like this, a flow chart, just like that. It looks a big long page like that. That actually goes with the notes. It's just a kind of a visual so you can see the notes. I'll explain that as we go along. And then there's another one back there that says supplemental, and it has talks about administering biblical discipline. Biblical discipline and chastisement, what do we mean by that? And how do you do that practically? What are some practical hints for that? That is a combination. This one is a combination of about 5 or 6 different men who have put this together, and so we won't go over that tonight. That's just an extra, because there's no way I can get to all this. So if you're ready tonight, you should have your notes out that say discipline with encouragement. I'll read the first part of that, and then I'm going to go right to that chart and see if I can explain that for you real quick, and then we'll come back and go through the notes. Everybody with me? Okay. I noticed we have a lot more pretty faces in here than we did last week. I see Dee's class. Dee is sick tonight, and welcome, ladies. We're glad you're in our class tonight, besides the other ladies that were already here. And so hopefully this will help you out. I'm just going to read through this real quick on the top part of this. So if you want to follow along with me, discipline with encouragement. A lot of this we've already covered in the class, but since we've got new people, I'll say a few things about it. Discipline, simply, when we talk about discipline in the biblical concept, we're talking about probably the best way to say it is discipleship. That's really what it is. It's training, it's encouraging, it's instructing, it's correcting. That works, by the way, whether you're disciplining a child or disciplining a new Christian. Somebody who, when we say discipline, by the way, we're not talking about chastisement. We're talking about training. And you need to train new converts. They need to know that there's some things we do. And by the way, I know it's not popular anymore to say this in church, but there's some things Christians shouldn't do. And it's okay to say that to people and say, No, that's wrong. Biblically, that's wrong. We don't do that. We don't agree with that. And it's not because it's our opinion. It's because what we see clearly in the Scripture. And say the same thing is true for your children. You'll notice under that it says, A, if you do not verbally instruct your children, how will they ever know what is expected? If you don't give them the rules, kids aren't born with a understanding of what they should and shouldn't do in all areas. In fact, if they're like me, I had to be told a lot of times what I should and shouldn't do. There were some very simple things I had to be told, and there were some complex things, you know, that my parents always said, we'll explain that when you get older. Just do what we say right now. And so you have to give them some explanations. You have to give them some training. And I know one of the things I talk about in here a lot, and I've talked about for the last 8 weeks, a lot of discipleship, a lot of discipline for the children has to do with the discipline of the parents. You have to do the work. Me personally, I've said it 1,000 times, I think 18 years worth of work is worth it for my kids to get out and live the rest of their lives and live it right. And I think it's always worth it. We get so busy, we forget what we're here for. So the question I'd ask you is, have you explained to them what you expect of them? I mean, have you clearly explained to them what you expect? Not just assume that they would know. Because trust me, most of the time, they don't know. Especially younger children, you know, 3 or 4 year old, they don't know. You have to tell them over and over. I mean, I had to tell them how to eat, you know, how to hold a fork, how to hold a spoon. I had to tell them how to go to the bathroom. They don't know. So why would you think they would, if they don't know those simple things, why would you think they would know complex issues and what's principle and what's manners and what's politeness and what's forgiveness? They don't know that unless you train them. That's not the school teacher's job. That's not the youth pastor's job. That's not the Sunday school teacher's job. If you're a parent, that's your job. All those other people, they're there to help you and back up what you say, but you're the one who should be teaching them. If you don't, the other thing you need to understand is, if you don't live by the moral standard of your own instructions, your kids are going to wonder how much you really mean it or how important it is to you. And if it's not important to you, I can tell you this, we've said this over and over in this class, it's not going to be important to them. We're not talking about standards for an adult and standards for children. We're talking about moral standards, biblical truths. If you don't expect your kids to lie, then you should not lie yourself. If you don't think they should steal, then you should not steal or be dishonest in any way. The more you are morally correct, the easier it is to teach them moral correctness. And so understand that. What's required for children to help own their values themselves, which is what I'm trying to get my kids to. I'm glad that my kids want to do what's right because I'm dad and they want to please me. But I'd much rather them want to do what's right because they want to please God. Because when they leave the house, They'll keep doing that, right? Or when dad is gone. Two things are needed. Number one, they need moral knowledge, what the Bible says. And I think number two, they need a parental example. Then D, I'm just scanning this. This is for you new folks. This is we've already covered this in here, but I'm making sure you get it. And if you think I'm talking very fast, I got 9 pages. So yes, I'm talking very fast. D, parents always need to separate moral behavior from non-moral behavior. This is not always easy to do. Let me ask you a question. Is basketball a moral discipline? No, it's a physical discipline. But does it include moral behavior? Yes. It's hard to say. I don't discipline my child. I don't spank my child because he missed a basket on a basketball game. Right? If he misses a basket on a basketball game and he turns around and punches the guy who fouled him, now I got a problem. Now that enters into the moral realm. But you have to make sure you're separating those two. You don't punish kids for behavior that's non-moral. We'll talk about how that plays out in a minute. Not all activities in your child's day are moral in nature. That is, behavior flowing from the heart. Some activities are skill-based. However, skill-based activities still have to be performed in a moral way, right? Okay, so you're looking at your chart. Pull this chart out real quick. So this is just a discipline flow chart. It'll help you out a little bit. The filling in, I've already filled it in. If you knew how long it took me to make these little boxes, I had this on a Word program, Microsoft Word program. And when I came here, everything here is Apple. What is that? Pages. I was like, what is it called? And guess what? It doesn't translate. It translated, but it was really weird looking. I was like, oh, no. So I had to rebuild this whole silly thing. But if you're looking at it, here's what we're talking about. When we're talking about instruction, there's skills and talents, and there's behavior, separating the moral from the non-moral. If you're talking about skills and talents, one of the things you want to do, I'll give you these in detail, just follow that timeline across. So skills and talent include moral training, right? We don't whine, we don't cry, we don't fight, we don't do all that in a game, we don't do that at school, okay? There's moral behavior involved in all those things, and you want to encourage them, help them to improve in that by both encouragement and correction. You did that right. I would encourage them about their grades. I would encourage them about the game they're playing. And your skills are getting better, getting stronger. And sometimes I would correct them and say, that's not how you do it. I liked to play basketball when I was growing up. My son liked to play basketball. And there were many times we'd be in the driveway, and I would correct him. I'd say, no, that's not how you make a layup. Let me show you again. Nothing moral in it, but that's still part of my job as a parent, if I'm in non-moral behavior, to encourage him and correct him. And then, of course, there's goals and incentives. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But if you follow that line all the way across, don't worry, we'll get in details of this, and you follow it all the way back down, you see that line? Everything you do, I don't care if it's skill-based or behavior-based, it's all to bring glory to God, right? I tell my kids when they play sports, and they both played sports, and you do your best, and you glorify God in it. You have the right testimony and the right attitude, win or lose. When you win, you don't go brag and stand in front of the other people and say, no. And when you lose, you don't kick the chair over and scream and holler and have a little hissy fit and accuse everybody else of cheating. Moral behavior is involved in that. Everything you do, whether it's skill-based or not skill-based, whether we're talking about music, whether we're talking about intellect, whether we're talking about sports, non-moral behavior, but all of those are not designed for one reason. You want to train your children to glorify God in all of that, right? So you agree with that. So let's go down to the behavior part, okay? I'll give you this in detail in just a second. So when we're talking about behavior, we're talking about good behavior, right? And bad behavior. Good behavior, see on the bottom there, what do we want to do with good behavior? You can figure this out all by yourself, right? You encourage good, right? No, you're not saying anything. You encourage good behavior, right? Okay, good. And bad behavior, what do you want to do? You want to correct bad behavior. You want to say that's wrong. Okay, so when you get across that, now we'll go across that. When you're talking about correcting bad behavior, those of you who have been in my class, you'll know we've talked about the difference between childishness and foolishness. You will correct childishness different than you would correct foolishness. Childishness is innocent immaturity. He didn't know. He's too young to understand, and he didn't get it. Still want to correct that, right? Right? I still want to say, no, that's not how you do it. I won't punish you for that, but I want to correct you and I want to help you. And there's ways we'll do that, and you'll follow along with that in a minute. And in foolishness, that's acts of rebellion. That's a child who does know and decides, I know what's right, but I'm not doing that. Now, he may not say that out loud and in an audible voice, but in his mind, that's what he thought. Well, Mom and Dad said not to leave the yard, but they're not looking, so I'm going to leave the yard for a minute. That's foolishness. You knew not to leave the yard. You knew I told you not to leave the yard, and you knew I told you to stay in the yard, and you did it anyway. That's going to be corrected, right? So you get the general idea. So you're correcting childishness or foolishness, and you're encouraging good behavior. We'll follow those boxes out. So everybody knows kind of how to follow this now. I want you to notice something, though. On the end of all of these, whether we're talking about skills or whether we're talking about talents, whether we're talking about correction, whether we're talking about encouragement, right behavior, it all goes down to that last little box down there, right? Everything is done not to please the parents, not to make you proud of your children, which I hope you are, but that's not the goal. I have to admit, when my children were growing up, my goal was to make them good kids so I would be proud of them. And I am proud of them. You know my kids, and I brag on them all the time. But the real goal, that's not the real goal. The real goal is they grow up as adults that glorify God in everything they do, right? And so we'll talk about how you do that. So now go back to your notes. You can follow along on this chart as I go along. You can follow it now, right? You see how it goes? Everybody with me? Shake your head like this at least so I know that you're paying attention. Okay, there you go. So everybody can follow the chart. So look, when we talk about the flow chart, we're talking about number, or S1 there. We talked about that earlier. Skills and talents. There's physical skills, that which is basic to all, or at least most. Not everybody has complete physical skills. There are people who are handicapped or are born with mental developmental problems. But most people have basic physical skills, and that's developed through practice, coaching, and motivation. Everything from learning to eat to learning to walk, right? As a parent, you had to sit down. How many of you remember all that, holding them up and waiting for that moment where you could let them go and they're doing that whole... I used to love to watch the kids do that. It's like their whole body's trying to figure out, why aren't my legs working? But you have to coach them, train them to do that. So that's what you want to do. And everybody has physical skills to different levels. They're different people at different sizes and different physical abilities than me. Some much, much, much greater. Some much, much, much less. Everybody has different physical abilities according to size, genetics, and all the things your parents put into you. And then there's what I call talents, gifts from God. Each individual has been given different types of talents, different types and amounts of talents according to God's sovereign will. Some people have a lot of talent in music. I do not. I don't read music. I do sing with my family because they know how to find me. Anybody know what I mean by that? Wherever I start, they'll find me, and then they make me sound good. I sing with anybody else, and they're all looking at me like, you're not with us. I know I'm not with you. I want, just so you know, if you ever hear me sing in church, and I'm not singing with everybody, and I'm off key, I know I'm off key. I just don't know how to get on key. I hear it. I just don't know how to fix it. Anybody like that besides me? I can hear it, but my mind is going, you don't sound like everybody else. So some of us have musical talent, some of us have skills. I'm not one of those people. It may be sports talents, it may be intellect. Some people just pick things up. I mean, they are so intensely smart. Pastor Monty has an intellect. He catches things really a lot faster than I do. And sometimes, some of you will be honest, sometimes he says things from the pulpit, especially his vocabulary sometimes. Anybody ever notice that besides me? He'll say things and I'm like, what? What does that mean? And if you ever see me in a service pull my phone out and I'm doing this, I'm looking at the dictionary. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm just going, what in the world is he talking about? And so then I catch up and go, oh, I got you. So some people are more intellectually talented. And then there's what I think I would call giftedness. That's magnified talents through natural inclination or disciplined practice. And I do think there are people that have musical skills. And then I think there are people that are especially gifted in music. Especially gifted in intellect. Especially, not everybody, I used to think, I made this dumb statement a long time ago when I was a young man. I said, you know, if you work hard enough and you practice hard enough and you play hard enough, you could be as good as Michael Jordan. Can I tell you something? This body would have never been as good as Michael Jordan no matter what I did. I could have been as good as me, but I couldn't have been him. Okay? He had special, special, and there's guys in every sport, there's people in every musical concept, and you name it. There are people who are specifically talented for things, and I think they've been gifted that, and I'm glad they're here, by the way. So when we're talking, when I say skills, that's what I'm talking about. So if they're to use their skills, whether they eat or drink or whatsoever they do, we want to do all that to the glory of God, and we want to use moral training in that, right? You say, well, how does moral training? Well, there's simple things you've got to teach your children. We don't cheat, right? We don't take advantage of another person's weakness. We don't cheat in as far as stealing or in the government or anything like that. But we don't cheat in sports either. Never understood cheating in sports my whole life. I never understood that. You cheated and you won. But you cheated. So you didn't win. I don't want to cheat and win. I never understood why anybody would want to cheat to win. That doesn't make any sense. You know you didn't. You say, well, everybody thinks I won. Yeah, but you know you didn't. You know you cheated. Anyway, that's another lecture for another time. It irritates me to death when people think they're going to. Anyway, so moral training is involved in all that. S3, encouragement and correction. Make sure when you're encouraging your kids, and when it talks about skills and talents, that you're encouraging your kids through the cause and effect of your, link your words of encouragement to the cause and effect of your child's efforts. You did good. I like the way you did that. Because, and I'm talking them through it. I'm saying, and you have, I tell my kids all the time, my kids and my grandkids can all sing. And sometimes it's just like, wow, how come they can all sing and I can't sing? And I'm always telling them, you really sing good, you know, and I'm encouraging them. I take the granddaughters, I take them to the nursing home, and I say, those people appreciated when you sang. They sang for one of our activities, and I try to push them all the time. You've got skills. Use your skills. They're good. Encourage them through their verbal praise, and let them know that you appreciate them. B, the most effective praise, I think, is unexpected praise, and the most effective correction is in private, in moments of non-conflict. You ought to star that, by the way. Most effective praise isn't when your child hits the winning shot in the game and you jump up and down and say, you're wonderful. Most effective praise is when he misses the winning shot in the game, you say, you know, you're still a good athlete. You did a good job. You did your best. He wouldn't expect that. But that's when it counts. You with me? Okay? And the most effective correction is not when they do something wrong. It's later on. You correct them when they did it wrong, but later on you say, can I tell you what would help here? Especially when we're talking about skills and talents. One of the things you need to learn, maybe I'll send you to Miss Erica to learn how to sing better. Maybe I'll do this. Somebody with a better skill can help you. And you're encouraging them. Let's see. It's often good to link your words of encouragement with touch. And yes, I still believe that. I know in our society, if you're training somebody else's children, you have to be very, very careful. But not mine. And not my grandkids. I hug them all the time. If I walk in the room and my grandkids don't hug me, I'm going to stand there and go, right here. I'm right here. And I'll leave, you know, I don't have a problem with that. Sometimes a hug, a nudge, a wink, or even a simple smile can be effective. Or in guys, you know, in the game, that little high five thing, that's cool. Did a good job, nice job. Whether they got off the piano or whether they got off the volleyball court, good job. Man, that's good. Let them know it. So do we use goal incentives to train skills and talents? I say yes. You may disagree with me on that. Use goal incentives to motivate actions, okay, with non-moral behavior. In other words, when I say actions, let's say basketball. How many points you score? You score so many points. I'll do this for you. I don't have a problem with that. Non-moral actions. Not you do really well and you don't beat up anybody and don't lose your and you don't get five fouls. No. That's moral behavior. I don't reward. You do that because it's right. You with me? You know, you play the piano, you play this concert perfectly, and I'll take you out to eat. Great. You play it with the wrong attitude, and no matter how perfect you got it, I got a problem. Everybody still with me? Okay. Use them to help develop skills and talents. Remember, use a balanced approach. A Christian must be motivated from the heart in all things. Goal incentives to motivate behavior are not incentives at all. That's just bribing your kids. Right? No, you don't get mad and yell at a referee tonight and I'll take you out to eat. No, you don't get mad and yell at a referee, period. End of story. Just because you saw your dad, I mean, you don't do that, right? You got the difference. So, and then we talk about bribes, and I'm going to skip over that. Go down to number 5, of course. That's redirect motives towards glorifying God. So if you're paying attention, we just went across the top part. This is not the part you want to talk about, so I did it really fast. Everybody with me? We just went across the top and went down. If you didn't catch on what I was doing, you can look at it later because I don't have a lot of time. For those of you who are not in my class on a regular basis, you came in from Dee's class, we're doing a 19-week, two-hour-a-night class in 9 weeks in 1 hour. So if you feel like you're being shotgunned with the, you know, it's just, okay, that's what I'm doing. I can't help it. I got to go. All right, so now let's talk about behavior because that's really what we all want to talk about anyway. When we define behavior, we're saying behavior as the actions that proceed from the heart. What motivates you, your heart motivates you to act a certain way. If God's got your heart, you act a certain way. If the devil's got your heart, you act a certain way. And if you've got your heart, you act just like the devil has your heart. There's really not much difference, to be honest with you, okay? Because I'm a wicked sinner, and you're a wicked sinner, whether you admit it or not, and your heart is more concerned, when your heart's not turned towards God, your heart is more concerned with self than anything else. Amen? Let's not kid it. And so are your children. I still remember when I was a young father, my kids weren't very old, 3-4 years old, and I heard a pastor preach about this, and he said, all children are born wicked sinners. And even though I knew theologically that's correct, I didn't like to hear him say that. I thought, my kids are not wicked sinners. It didn't take very long for me to figure that he was actually correct. They are wicked little sinners who want their own way and want to do their own thing, and they don't even care what you think about it. And they've got to be trained, and all kids have to be trained that way. Look at number B there. Parents motivate heart behavior by encouraging their children's good behavior and by correcting the children's poor behavior. Both are needed to motivate the child properly. I would love to agree with some modern psychologists that if you just encourage the good behavior and you just stay on the positive, the child will be fine. But that doesn't work. You do have to do that. By the way, I'm not on the other side of that coin either, nor am I this guy that says, you just do what I say and keep your mouth shut, and I don't... No. Sometimes that has to happen. Sometimes you have to correct your children and say, you know what? Now you're in trouble. Now you've crossed the line, and you knew better, and now you're going to have to be punished. I don't think either one used exclusively is going to work. I think you have to have both. I think you have to be willing to correct the child and say, no, you're not going to do that. But I also think... And where I find a lot of Christian families fall short, they're good on correcting, and we're a good Christian family, we don't do that. Wonderful, say it. But at the same time, when they're right and they do well, let them know they're right and they did well. It's one of the things I worry about sometimes with dads. We get a little, you know, we're more here sometimes, and mom's more here sometimes. I'm not saying that's always the way it is. Some families are different. But would you agree with me in a general sense, isn't that true? Guys, we start over here on the correction side. Mom's over here on the encouraging side, right? Shouldn't be any side. Mom should be here, dad should be here, mom should be there, dad should be there. It should be equal. Don't make dad the bad guy. I know some families where mom's the bad guy. Boy, you don't want to make mom mad, okay? Either way. All right, so keep looking. So we're going to encourage your behavior. We're going to encourage good behavior. That's B2. And again, we're just following now. We're on the bottom. We're going to go to the bottom first and then back up to the top. So B2, we're going to encourage good behavior in three ways. What we call pre-activity encouragement, present activity encouragement, and post-activity encouragement. You say, where did you get that? Believe it or not, that came from Wendy's restaurants. That's not what they called it. They called it Talk To Me, TTM. In fact, you could get a little button you could earn on your shirt as a manager that said TTM. Mitch Mintz, that's exactly what you do. Talk to me. You talk your crew into position, you talk your crew through the position, and you talk your crew out of the position. You have a guy who's working the fry station, and his main job is to take care of fries and chicken nuggets, of course, because they are also fried. And you talk him, here's what I want you to do. When we get busy, I want you to keep so many baskets down. I want you to keep it. If you look at me and I do two, drop two baskets, whether you feel like you should or not. And I mean, when we get hitting in the lunch hour from 11 to 1, man, I want you on it. He gets into position. Now we're at lunch, and it's cranking up. Say, hey, it's 11 o'clock. We're going. Yes, sir, we're going. All right, here's what I want you to do. And I'm talking him into position. When he gets through, you know what I say? Man, 11 to 1, you were king of the fries. You the man. I'm putting you on fries tomorrow. I don't know if I got anybody as good as you. Talk him into position, talk him through the position, talk him out of the position. If you learn that for your kids, you will have a wonderful thing. We're going to grandma's house, right? All right, everybody in the car, we're going to grandma's. Hey, when we get to grandma's house, you know my grandmother had this little blue glass. Anybody know what that stuff's called? I don't know what it is. Blue glass stuff, like little diamond-looking blue glass. Had little chisels, things all in it. Some of you are shaking your head, so you know what I'm talking about. And you didn't touch that stuff because it breaks. And when you're 7 or 8 years old, you should not be touching stuff that breaks. And my mom would say, you touch your stuff when you get in the house, I'll kill you. That was, you know, okay. Well, maybe not been the best way to say it, but hey, right? And, you know, you say, look, when we get to grandma's house, don't be running in that room. You know that stuff's in there. I don't want to see you run the room. They get carried away and say, hey, stop. Oh, yeah. And they stop. Thank you. Good. Get home. Man, you were great at grandma's house. Okay, you get the idea? So we're going to encourage them. That's what all this is talking about, pre-activity encouragement. That's encouraging the child before the activity even takes place. We're going to a restaurant. Are there certain things you expect of your child in a restaurant? Like sit in your seat and stay in your seat and use good manners? You say, well, they know that. Do they? I'm telling them before they walk in, especially younger children. Here's what I want. Here's what I'm expecting today, okay? Present activity encouragement, that's encouraging the child during the event or activity, using the same types of encouragement as E1. You're doing the same kind of thing, talking them through it. Post-activity encouragement, that's encouraging the child after it. So how do you do that? Verbal reminders, obviously you're encouraging the child to do right by reminding him what's expected. You don't always have to do it, but there are certain times you're going to have, in situations they're not familiar with, tell them what you expect before it starts. We never go to church. We're going to church for the first time. I got some things I'm going to tell them. Because I don't want them getting somebody else's church and be doing crazy stuff. Okay, especially, and some of you may have done this, on vacation you go to a different church. Younger kids, I'm saying, look, in this church, when you get in there, you're going to go to Sunday school, whatever they tell you to go to, you're going to go to, and you're going to act like you've got good sense in there. You say, you didn't say that to your kids. Yes, I did. And I expect them to do that. And before the when Sunday school's over and we're going to church, I ask them how it went in there. I want to know. So that's a good thing. Tell them what's expected. Not threatening, but preparing. You're not threatening. If you don't, I'll kill you kind of thing. No, just tell them what you want. Explain it to them. That's you telling the child. Be careful of over-reminding. Tell them to expect them to follow through. Don't wear them out. Like I say, you don't have to do it every time. You come to Faith Baptist Church, your child is 10 years old. He's been coming here since he was in grade school. I mean, since he was in the nursery. And you tell him every Sunday, come on. He's got some of it. There may be some new things that you'll need to tell him, especially when he goes into the youth department. But you don't have to don't overdo it, but do it. Okay? Dialogue questions. The goal of this is to form encouragement to get your child to tell you what's expected. Have them repeat what is required. That's the child telling you. That commits them to keeping the rules. If I tell you that room where grandma's blue glass is and all her little figurines, I don't want to see you run in there. In fact, I don't even want you to go in there unless grandma takes you in there. You understand me? Yes. Now, what did I just say? What did I just say? Cindy, what did I just say? Don't what? Go in what room? Which room? All the rooms are grandma's. Which one? Where the blue glass is and the figurines are, right? Unless... then you can go. We understand each other? Now, the good couple things that she knows now, right? Here's the thing I like about it. When she does it, she doesn't get to say to me, I didn't know. Really? Because I told you. Well, I didn't hear you. Yes, you did. You repeated it to me. Right? No question what's going to happen now. Cindy, didn't I tell you? Did you go in there anyway? No. I didn't know which way she was going to go on that. And no, I was never in there. Even if you saw me, it wasn't me. Okay. Don't laugh because I've heard kids say stuff like that. It really wasn't me. You don't have a twin. Okay. So through positive words, using positive words often as often as possible, as often as possible, use positive words to encourage each other rather than negative words to restrain. Emphasize right behavior. Instead of saying, hey, don't spill your milk, say, hey, would you be careful with that? You get the difference? It's a subtle difference, but kids notice it. You get in that bed, don't you get out of that bed. Okay. You're almost challenging them, aren't you? I want you to go to bed, and I want you to go to sleep. Okay? If they get out of the bed, then I'm going to say, hey, let's not get out of the bed again. All right? Now, after that, we've crossed another line. We went from childishness right into rebellion, and I'm not going to do what you tell me, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So verbal affirmation to confirm, reinforce positive behavior. That's you verbally agreeing with the child's action. Nice job. I knew you could do it, right? I want to tell them that. And I think you should do that. And then what about rewards for good behavior? Well, rewards are used to motivate behavior, not to stimulate it. I do think you can use rewards in this, but I think you have to be careful, and I think I've got it in here. Let's see. Rewards should be because you were in a store today, not if... Okay, rewards should be because you were good in the store today, not if you are good in the store today. Anybody see a difference in that? And rewards when you get behavior are not all the time. They're rare. I mean, I just couldn't believe how good you were and all you did. And you know what? You always used to ask me for a candy bar. Remember I told you never have? I'm going to give you one today. That was cool. Thank you. But I'm not going to do that every time we leave the store. Because what's going to happen if I do that every time we do the store? They're going to expect it, okay? So sometimes when it's unexpected, I think it works best, if you're following me there. Rewards should be, number three, rewards should be used on a sporadic, unexpected basis, or the child might become reward dependent. That just degenerates into nothing more than the backdoor bribe. Then they're going to say to you, I was good in the store today. I was really exceptionally good, if you think about it. So they're being good for what? To glorify God, right? So you see what happened? You have to be careful. Okay, so always direct good behavior. I'm so proud of that. I know God is pleased with you. I'm always going to direct that back to glorifying God. So now if you follow me along here, we went right across the bottom. Everybody still with me now? You see how we went right across the bottom here? Okay, good. And so now we're back to that same corner. Now let's go to the middle part where everybody likes, where we get to beat them. Okay? I know, sometimes I hear people say this, don't you ever beat your kids? Okay, yeah, hang on. That's not my primary go-to, okay? And it shouldn't be yours either. So let's talk about discipline with correction for wrong behavior, okay? I should say this. When I'm talking about correction, I'm talking about correction of wrong and or bad behavior. You say, is there a difference? Yes. Sometimes kids do something wrong, but there was no wrong intent. They just did it wrong. There's a difference between wrong behavior and bad behavior. You can have wrong behavior that is bad, but you can just have wrong behavior. They did something wrong. We're talking about childishness, right? They didn't know better. It was wrong. I had a kid. Fortunately, it wasn't my kid. I still remember we were at Eagle Dell one time, and one of our members had cancer, you know, and they had the treatment, what do you call it, a chemo, and they lost all their hair. And I was working with a couple of kids, talking to them in the gym, and this guy was standing there talking, and the kid turned and said, "You're bald. That looks ugly bald." Now, the kid was about 4 years old, four or five, and he didn't have any clue why this guy had went bald. He was like, "Oh." So I said, "Look, first of all, it's not right to say anybody's ugly. Second of all," and I went through the whole, and the kid started crying after I got to the explanation, like, "I'm sorry." That's okay. Should I have spanked that child? No, because I got the point across. It was wrong behavior, and he needed to know that's wrong. No, we don't do that. Now, if next week I saw him in the gym, he said, "Hey, there's old Baldy." Okay, game over now, right? You following the difference? Okay, so let me talk about that real quick. So when we're talking about discipline with correction, there's some basic general principles. In the early years, you're putting character or biblical virtues into your child. We've talked about that for the last 8 weeks. You're exchanging wisdom for foolishness. Your child is born with a foolish heart, so were you. And somebody had to train it out of you, right? You made a lot. Anybody make a lot of stupid decisions when you were younger? I'm sorry, not you stupid. Anybody made a lot of dumb decisions when you were younger, foolish decisions where you went, "Well, that wasn't a good plan." Right? I know I did. If my mom and dad are watching tonight, my mom just said amen. So that foolishness had to be trained out of them. A child by nature is self-oriented. You know that. Biblical ethics is other-oriented. That produces conflict, right? A child, when they begin to walk and talk, they are concerned with one thing: their own personal happiness. They could care less if their brother eats again. Right? They don't care whose toy it is. I want to play with it. That's all that matters. So they're self-oriented. You have to get them to operate in a Christ-like manner, other-oriented. What about the other person? What about their feelings? What about their needs? You know what's wrong with our society today? Still other-oriented. Got adults that are still acting like fools, and their whole life is concerned about who? Me and me only. Don't care what you think. Don't care how you live. I don't give a rip. By the way, that should not You don't repay that in kind. Somebody's me-oriented and they're all worried about themselves. That doesn't mean you get to repay that in kind. You are still other-oriented. You still put Christ first and others second, regardless of how others treat you. You see how I did that to adults? I lectured you and you all just sat there and went, yeah. I could have screamed at you and grabbed a couple of you and shook you, but I don't think it would have been as effective. You're getting an idea? Okay, so three phases of conflict. Now, let me say this. I'm going to give some ages here. The ages are not exact. Some kids mature faster than other kids. Some kids are smarter than other kids. Some kids just have a rebellious streak and you fight it for a while. But it's basically three phases I look at in my kids growing up. There's one what I call the repeating phase, earmarked by change. That's 0 to 5. Anybody know what I'm talking about when I say the repeating phrase? Nope. No. You can't do that. Didn't I tell you? And you just say, don't you get tired? Anybody have kids under 5? Don't you get tired of saying the same thing over and over? It's like, I bet I said that 1,000 times today. And when your husband gets home from work, or when you get home from work, your wife gets home from work, whoever's doing whatever, you say that. Hey, have you never looked at them and said, I bet I said that 1,000 times? Well, maybe you should have said 1,001. I don't know, because sometimes you got kids like me that go, What did you say? You said that. Yeah. And, you know, we don't learn fast. So there's a repeating phase, and then there's phase number 2. Sometimes this starts earlier than 6 years old, but that's the rebellion phase. That's earmarked by confrontation. 6 to 14. Now, though, again, the ages can be 3 to 14. I don't know. They vary. I'm just kind of giving a general concept. But I know, and my daughter's sitting here, so I have to be careful. But for me, later elementary, junior high, I could have strangled them both. I was like, oh. It was always, my kids were not rebellious. They're very subtle rebellion. Their rebellion is walk up to the line and kind of, I didn't go over the line. I'm right here. I see the line. I'm not going over the line, Dad. Don't worry about it, Dad. I'm right here. And I just went, I mean, they didn't, well, I shouldn't say they never went over the line. There was Dean. So, you know, and occasionally they did. Good? Occasionally they did do that. Okay? But there's that little rebellion. You're trying to figure out, do I have to always do what they say? No, just as long as you're living here and as long as I'm paying for stuff, yes, you do. And then there's, what happened? I turned 2 pages. There we go. And then number 3, there's what I call, some of you know exactly what I'm talking about, especially if you have kids in sports. The running phase. Okay, my kids were in choir, band, cheerleading, volleyball, basketball, soccer. I don't know, I'm missing some stuff, I'm sure. Student council, yearbook. Okay, anybody know what that means when your kids don't have a driver's license before they get their drive? What are you doing? I spent my whole life going from one place to another. I had no idea where I was going half the time. I get home and Becky say, you're going to so. I'm like, I mean, oh, okay. It just felt like I was always going somewhere. That's earmarked by challenge. Your kids will get older. They'll begin to challenge your authority. And let me say this. In a way, they should. What? No, I don't mean challenging as in rebellion. I mean, what am I supposed to do? I want them to take on some more authority. I want them to take on some leadership. In fact, I tried to yield it to them. Okay, here's the options you have today. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to tell me, aren't you? Not today. You just need to figure out what you want to do. Which one of these is more important? I have to make your decision. Yeah, well, get ready, because nobody's going to walk around with you the rest of your life and make your decisions for you. Right? At least not your mom. This mom and dad didn't. And so that's how we go along. So there's some specific principles you didn't need to know. The type of correction depends on the presence or absence of wrong motive. Would you agree with that? What motivated them to do what they did? Intent or motive should determine the amount and the type of punishment and or correction. Intent or motive does not determine if you get punished. Let me say that again. Motive just determines how much and what type. Doesn't say, well, they didn't really mean it, so I don't have to do anything. No. It doesn't matter if they meant it or not. If it's wrong, they need to be corrected. It does determine what kind of punishment. It does determine the amount of punishment. It does determine the type of punishment. But it should never determine if they're punished or if they're corrected. They need that. You don't believe that? Read the book of Proverbs. How many times it talks about correction and admonishment, and over and over and over. We need to do that. I need to say, wrong. That's not happening. You're wrong there. And here's why. Let me explain it to you. Okay? It's not an if. So when you're making an assessment on a child's actions, you should basically ask yourself this. Were my children's actions accidental or intentional? Not what they say they were, what you probably recognize they were. Was it a mistake or did they have a malicious intent? I mistakenly picked up a bat and hit my sister in the back of the head. I don't know how that happened. That's a mistake, right? Well, in my house, it is a mistake, but yours. There was a motivation behind it, and that's going to come. So, talk about childishness. We've gone through this before in the other lessons, so I'm going to go through it really, really fast, okay? Childishness. Everybody still with me on the chart? We just divided it. We're dividing this. Everybody still with? Okay, good. Childishness. So childishness is an act of innocent immaturity, mistakes made without wrong or evil intent. And by the way, sometimes you have to be careful because there was evil intent. They're just getting old enough to hide it now. Even a four-year-old can pull that off. I'm telling you, they can be slick. Just be careful. We're talking about that could include awkwardness, you know, clumsiness, ignorance. They just don't know, okay? Innocent mistakes should be corrected, not punished. You need to be careful. Don't do that again. Let me show you how to do that. Be careful and watch what you... if it's really an innocent mistake, I still need to correct it, but I may not need to punish it. Childishness becomes foolishness after instruction has been received and understood. Agreed? Once they got it, and I know they got it, they understand it, now we have another problem. Now words are not going to help. I'm going to explain it to you, and then I'm going to punish you. Okay? Admonishment, the different, if you're on B4 there, you're looking at your chart, we're talking about how to correct somebody when they've done wrong in the area of childishness. So admonishment means to warn or put in mind. These are three of the warning steps. That was wrong because if you do that again, do you understand? Okay? I think all three of those go into that when we're talking about childishness. That was wrong, and it's wrong because, okay? And then I would go into the next phrase. If you do that again, now that you know it's wrong, then there'll be punishment for that. And here's what the punishment will be. And at the end, do you understand what I'm talking about? Right? Pretty clear there, right? Once you make those three statements, the kids, there's really nothing left. Now they understand. So then there's also, by the way, related consequences. The consequences must relate to the mistake or action. The consequentials should be logical. Let's say you have a six-year-old child and he decides this morning he's going to fix his own cereal. The only problem with that is you buy milk by the gallon. Anybody know what's about to happen? What's about to happen? It's going to be spilled milk one way or the other. He's going to pull it out of the refrigerator and he's not going to realize how heavy it is and to the floor it goes. Or he will get it out safely and they'll unscrew it safely, but there's very few six-year-olds that can pour a gallon of milk with one hand. Even with two, it's kind of like, right? Okay, shouldn't have done that. First time he's ever done it. So you go in there, you get yourself a belt, I mean a good one, and you beat the living daylights out of that kid for dropping the milk, right? Is that a logical consequence? No. Huh? don't say it again, Carl. Okay, and so, no. What's the logical consequence? Come on, tell me, what's the logical consequence? You're cleaning the mess up, and I'm telling you, next time you want milk, you tell Dad, I'll get it for you. It's too big. When you get older, you can do that, but right now you can't. So I'm not going to get on the floor and clean that up. I didn't spill it. I think there should be, that's part of the correction, right? Now, you clean it up. Now, I know, 6 years old, he's going to clean it up, and as soon as he's gone, I'm going to get a mop out and really clean it up. But he still has to be part of that. You understand what I'm saying here? So that's part, when we talk about logical consequences, that's what we're talking about, related consequences, and they're logical. What about property? We must teach our children the principles of good stewardship. Property has value to its owner. We talked about this again in an earlier lesson. Even if it has no value to you. All right, same, let me give you another one. Johnny, it's mom's birthday. Johnny goes next door. He sees flowers next door at his mom's house, at his neighbor's house. He pulls the flowers up by the root and brings them to his mom. Happy birthday, Mom. He didn't know any better. So what do you do? What's logical? What would you do? Come on, people. Okay, Della. Go tell the neighbor he's sorry. I'd make him do a little more than that. That's a good... What else? Pull weeds for the neighbors. That's good. I would either make him do that or I'd buy more flowers to replant. Take it out of your allowance or whatever money you have from your birthday or whatever. You say, well, that's not fair. He didn't know. Listen, I know he didn't know, but he still did something wrong. He needs to understand that even ignorance of the law is no excuse, right? Try to tell that to a policeman. I didn't see any speed limit signs. See how good that worked for you. No, you still have to. You may not have known you were speeding. You may have, just lapsed for a minute. Doesn't work. You better get them used to that in society, because there's consequences to everything you do, whether you meant it or not. If I'm careless with a pistol and I shoot my wife while I'm cleaning it, the police don't go, well, that's okay. No big deal. There are going to be some consequences there. Okay? I don't know exactly what the consequences are. It's according to if we just had a big fight the night before and the neighbors heard it. You know, there may be more consequences, but you get my idea. There's consequences to everything you do, and kids need to learn that. Don't just think, well, he didn't know better. Don't worry about it. No. And don't let your parents or your neighbors or their friends, when they do something like that, don't punish them. Don't make them do it. No. It's my child. I'll take care of it. Thank you for your input. But okay. Anybody ever? Never mind. I got to go faster. Okay, where am I at? Property. How about privileges? Okay, privileges comes with responsibility. Irresponsibility equals loss of privilege. All right. If I say to my child, "Look, you can go out in the yard, but don't leave the..." No, I tell you what. If I say to my child, "You can go anywhere in our neighborhood, but don't leave my neighborhood." If they leave the neighborhood and I find out, guess what I'm going to say? Next time, you stay in the yard. You don't even get to leave the yard. If they leave the yard after a couple of other problems, other pieces of discipline, you won't be able to leave the house. In other words, they're losing the privilege because they abuse the responsibility. Do you not think you should teach them that? Yeah, don't keep giving them the same privilege and they keep violating the principle. What are you doing? You're teaching them that they can get away with it. Personal responsibility. Last thing. Children need to be taught that they're responsible for their offenses, even those actions were not there was not wrong intent. Even if they didn't mean to, it's okay. They're still wrong. Even if the act was only childishness, the child needs to... Who said that a while ago? Properly apologize. Okay, child needs to properly apologize, make restitution if necessary, and attempt not to repeat the offense. Right? That makes good sense. Again, we're going to redirect all those good... So now we've got almost the whole chart done, except for the fun part. Okay, so we've got the skills and talents, we've got the encouragement, we've got correction of childishness, we've gone all the way out. Now let's go to what happens if your child, you tell them what to do, and they know what to do, and they decide not doing it, doing what I want to do. It's okay to raise your hand, don't get upset. How many in this room believe in the principle of corporal punishment? Spanking, whatever. Ooh, wow, you're a mean crowd. You people need to see a psychologist. Or quit reading your Bible, because that is a biblical principle. There's no question about that. So what do we do about foolishness? A, foolishness is defined as willful defiance and open rebellion. Amen? Willful defiance. I'm not doing what you tell me to do. Even if they don't say the word, they just didn't do it, it's still defiance. Right? Well, he didn't say anything. It doesn't matter. He didn't do what he was told. A child's not acting childish if he's being intentionally disobedient. Foolish behavior always needs correcting, but not always in the same manner or always with the same strength or consequence. There are different levels of foolish behavior. You would agree with me, right? There's sometimes just simple foolishness like, what are you thinking? I mean, well, the truth was they weren't thinking. Okay? Active rebellion is an act of willful defiance. Never take the following statements lightly. We talked about these in another lesson. I included them back in here. Kid looks me in the face and I tell him what to do, especially my own child, and says, "No!" Okay. That's not going to work. Okay? I'm going to have a problem with that. You can't make me do it. I love it when a kid says something like that to me. It's just like, oh, really? I was going to say 220 pounds, but I'm 205 pounds now. You are about 25 pounds. I'm pretty sure I can make you do it. There are a few things you cannot make a child do, and I've said that before in another class. I do not try to make children eat. I'm not going to cram food down their throat, and I do not make them go to sleep. Yeah, good luck with that. You close your eyes. You go to sleep right now. I mean right now. I can make them stay in bed, and they'll eventually fall asleep, but I can't make them quit trying to do that. don't know what you're thinking, okay? And if you're trying to cram food down his throat, you need to talk to me. Because you can get in real trouble for stuff like that, okay? Just understand it. All right, so I will not. Don't tell me what to do. Shut up. Oh. I am so thankful that neither one of my kids growing up looked me in the face and said, shut up. I am so thankful they didn't do that. I would not be here today speaking. I don't know what would have happened, but it wouldn't have been a good plan for either way. All right, so passive rebellion is an act of indirect defiance and can include things. Now listen, most of us don't deal so much with the active open rebellion, but the passive rebellion, tell me you don't see this before. A selective hearing. Oh, I didn't hear you say that. That's one of the reasons I say to them, you repeat it. Right? How about forgetting? Becky, I don't know if Becky got the phrase or I came up with the phrase, but we used to say it all the time in our family. You didn't forget. You chose not to remember. If it was important, you would have remembered it. Ask some kid, ask some 12-year-old about a different basketball player's stats. Man, he'll rattle into, you know why? It's important to him. If you forgot, you just didn't think it was important. You didn't think what I said was important enough for you to remember. You chose not to remember. You didn't forget. I told you, you repeated it, and now you forgot? I don't think so. Okay? Pleading or begging, you know, trying to wear you down. Don't let that go on. Stop that. No. Especially in public, not a good plan. I will walk you right out of the store. I can come back to the store later. It bothered me not a bit. I'll roll my card over to one of the employees and say, look, I don't have time to put this back up. I'm so sorry. I will come back and I will pay for it if anything's damaged. But I've got to, and I'll walk them out of the store and I'll go home. We'll fix this right now. You want to whine? You want to plead? You want to, we're not doing that. Okay? Don't let that happen. Ignorance of the obvious. Well, I didn't think that would hurt her. I've actually heard that statement before. I didn't know that... I didn't know that window would break that easy. You threw a rock that big at a glass window and you didn't know it would break. Yeah, come on. Cuteness. How many of you have ever seen, there's a video, I don't remember who showed it to me first. Listen, Linda. How many of you have ever seen that video? Listen, Linda. It's very funny, isn't it? No, it's not funny at all. If he's speaking to his mama, no. And you got to be careful because your kids... I'm telling you, they can be so, and even teenagers, they can be so cute. And, oh, Dad, come on, you know. Yeah, and I know you're still getting punished, but that's, you are being funny, but you're still getting it, right? Be careful. They can pull you out of it. Cuteness, clever, charming behavior intended to mask the seriousness of the offense. Doing something other than what I was instructed, right? Once you get in there, don't you clean that bathroom. 20 minutes later, come back. You didn't even touch the bathroom. I know, but I made my bed. Well, that's nice, but I told you to clean the bathroom, right? Your kids never do that, I know. They probably just... This is for people that don't come to our church. You can help them with it later on. The punishment or consequences must fit the crime because the punishment... I love this statement. This is not my statement. I think Gary Ezzo said this. The punishment sets the value of the offense. Now, think about that for a second. The punishment sets the... Let me go ahead. I gotta go fast. A child's sense of justice, his sense of right or wrong, is established through punishment, not reward. Parents must be aware of the two errors of punishment. Number one, underpunishing, that sets a low value of the nature of sin. So I said a while ago, he took a bat and hit his sister in the back of the head with a baseball bat. 5-minute timeout. About right? No. That's severely under... I want him to understand how serious that is. And he's going to get a much more serious punishment for that. Sometimes, though, we overpunish. A lot of times that's when we're in a bad mood. Not you. I'm talking about me personally. I told you make your bed every morning. This morning you didn't make you to bed. So for the next year, you'll sleep on the floor without any cover. That's about right, right? Now, you laugh, but I've heard all that kind of stuff happen. And a lot of times, it doesn't have to do with the offense. It has to do with the mood of the parent at the moment. Folks, that's sad. That's not justice, and that's not right. And your child has a right to be upset. They still have to obey the authority. Even if authority's wrong, they still have to obey that authority, unfortunately. But you are needlessly frustrating them and aggravating them. And they will eventually rebel against that. So punishment has to fit the crime because it sets a value on the crime. It tells them what's really important to you. You know, I'd like to give you a lot more examples, but I don't have time. Parents should consider the following four factors when rendering a judicial decision. Doesn't that sound legal? But it kind of is. So here's what I want to. Here's the things I want to consider before I punish my child: the frequency of the offense, how often they've done it, and how close together those offenses were. Right? If they did something and I corrected them and punished them for it, and 5 minutes later they do it again, okay, now we're getting something serious here. If they do it and a year later they do it again, I'm still going to correct them, but you see the difference? So how often they do it and how close they are together, I think that into it. The context of the moment, the context has a lot to do with it. Let's say your son's playing a basketball game. He misses the last shot of the game, and he walks over and kicks the chair. He's disappointed because he went, is it right? Did he kick the chair? Does he need to be corrected? So he never plays basketball again. Oh, come on. That's different than he's on the game. He's in the last few minutes. The coach pulls him out for a better shooter and sits him on the bench, and he walks over and kicks the chair then. Different thing. The context has something to do with it. Would you agree? Okay, so I know that wasn't the best example, but it's top of my head. Come on, give me a break. Okay, so you would consider the frequency, the context. You would also consider the child's age. Obviously, you don't punish a 2-year-old like you punish a 12-year-old, or you shouldn't. And the child's character based on current and past instances. What they're characterized by. Not what they just did, but what they normally do. That's really out of character for them. So the punishment probably is going to be a little less because I know that was something that there had to be some circumstance there that caused this. And I may make a little better allowance for that. If they do it all the time, they're constantly lying, that's different than somebody who's caught in a lie one time. Agreed? You see where I'm going with this? So I want you to understand that. So all those things you got to consider based on past performance. The three levels of offense. Number one, verbal admonishment. That's the lecture stage. My kids will both tell you, even my grandkids will tell you, much, much rather have grandpa spank us. Much rather have dad spank us than stand there and talk for half an hour. Because I would go through all this material with them. Now let me explain to you why. Here's the flow chart. Now here's where you are. No, I didn't use the flow chart. But I mean, I'll give them a long lecture and they're like, yes, I know. No, you obviously don't know because you continue to do. So we're going to make sure you do know. Get your Bible. You say, you didn't. Yes, I did. I wore them out. I'm serious. They would almost all of them tell you, I'd rather he just be quiet, and I wish he would just get a belt and beat us. It'd be so much better. Okay? But that's okay. It's still a lecture stage. Make sure they know and they understand. This warning should not reduce the significance for first-time obedience. We still have that goal. I'm going fast. Level two, verbal admonishment with action. This is a lesson stage. Make sure they think about their actions. Include and explain about new but unacceptable behaviors that are becoming more common, old habits that are reemerging, yesterday's warnings they have unheeded, and why it's unacceptable. Look, this is not the first time we've had this conversation, and I've told you before, because the second time I'm telling you, and the third time, and the fourth time, it's going to be different, right? And it should. And then there's a consequential punishment. That's the legal stage. Make sure they feel painful consequences of their actions. Include a description of all acts and attitudes of defiance and failure to obey, along with the punishment. So, how do we chastise them? All right. 4 more minutes. Okay. Punishments used more in the early years. Natural and logical consequences used more in the later years. If I said to them, no more TV till your homework's finished, and I came in the room and they had a TV in there and they were watching it, guess what happens? They won't have a TV in your room. Logical consequence. I don't have to give them a spanking for that. I got better. I can almost always come up better. And sometimes I come up so good, it's like, no, please, spank us. We'd rather. I think if you think about it, you'll find that. There's also pain and loss. Pain is a gift from God. It's a warning that something's wrong. It helps us to focus and gain self-control to remember. Sometimes there's natural consequences, right? Don't ride your bike on the street. You're not strong enough yet. And they're riding a bike down the sidewalk. They decide to jump onto the street. They hit the curb, flip the bike, smack their elbow and shin on them. I'm not going to spank you. God just did it for me. I told you, and now you see why I told you. I know parents should pick them up and then give them a spanking while they're bleeding. Nah, I don't have to. Come on. This is pretty good. I think God took care of that one, right? And plus, you can't ride that bike for a week. But that's another story. Okay, let's see. Structured consequences. Those are consequences created by the parents to help the instruct the child. That's where you're sitting down thinking, what is it that they really need to learn here? And how can I get them to learn that? You're making and then there's, of course, logical consequences. Loss of property. You leave your bike in the driveway. I'll take your bike. You won't get to ride that bike for a while. Loss of privilege. You go overnight to a friend's house and you act up. Guess what happens? Next time somebody asks you out, what happens? Tell me. You don't get to go. I know, but everybody's going to be there this time. Well, you should have thought of that last time. Not this time. I already told you. Right? Loss of trust and responsibility. That's a hard one for older kids when you don't trust them anymore. Say, well, I'm going to have to take you to school now. I can't trust you to drive to school because I told you to drive straight to the school and you didn't. And so, sometimes I found this to be true in my kids, especially in as you get older. Some of the consequences are harder on me than they are on them. But I did it because they had to learn, right? Let's see, loss of trust, repayment and restoration. You know, you break the window, they got to pay for it. Isolation, this is a loss of social contact. Be careful not to overuse isolation as a substitute for chastisement. Timeouts are least effective on serious offenses. You know, major offense in your house and you say, all right, you got a timeout. And by the way, if you send them in a timeout and they have a TV and a phone in the room, you don't know what you're doing. Stop that. Okay? They don't have anything in there. I might throw a book in there. A Bible and another book. That's what you get to do. For 2 hours? Yep. Okay? So what is chastisement? Now, this is where the rubber hits the road. I cannot cover all this, but when I talk about chastisement, now I'm getting to the... I've talked about all the logical things and all the consequential things and all the related things and all that. We've got all that. So what about spanking? How do you do that? Okay. You do understand, first of all, there's a difference between spanking a two-year-old. By the time they're 12 almost, if you did it right, you're probably not going to be doing any spanking anyway. But the 2-year-old and the 12-year-old, right? Not only in what's the word? Harshness, hardness. Not only in length, okay? But in power and sting and all that. I do want them to have a little sting. I want them to know you did something wrong. And I want them to remember that. Chastisement means inflict physical pain with controlled... I like this definition. Physical pain with controlled force, not you out of control... I'm not asking if you were ever out of control. I'm just saying. Amend an inner attitude. We're not just working on changing it. I don't want them just to change the outward, pay outside. I want them to know this was wrong. It displeased me and it displeased God. You can't keep doing this. Because if you do, you're not going to just hurt me and God. You're going to hurt you. You're going to be the one paying for this the rest of your life. You can't do this. And I want them to understand that. Chastisement, I believe, is the most humbling form of correction. Amen. You know, bend over the bed, buddy. Chastisement without moral training, I believe, is ineffective. Violence is not trained into a child. It's unleashed if the child is not trained. Chastisement should always be associated with righteous training. Don't spank them if you aren't going to take the time to talk to them and train them. You're not the slave master. You're the parent. Why? Tell them why. Here's what I'm trying to accomplish. Here's what I want you to do. Here's why I have to do this. God said that this is one of the things that will help you, and they won't believe you. I didn't believe. My dad had told me all the time when he spanked me, and he did spank me. My mom spanked me. This is for your own good. You think at 7 years old, I went, oh, I see that. It never happened. But I'll tell you what, at 65, I'm going, yeah, I'm glad they did. Amen? I'm serious. I can honestly say I'm glad they did. They didn't overdo it. Maybe here and there they did because everybody does. They didn't, you know, underdo it. They didn't let me get away. Good. I'm glad they did. I'm thankful. All right? Let's see where I'm at here. D. Chastisement moral training must be used together as parents in the same cause. Mom and dad have to agree on this. Control without guidance is authoritarian, and guidance without sufficient punishment, without sufficient controls, is permissive. Now, you can go down, there's a list of things, okay, that you should do when you spank. There's a list of things you shouldn't do when you spank, and they're all listed here on this next page. How to do for rebellion. Flip the next page, how to chastise using the rod of correction. There's some things I would tell you you'd use. I don't believe you should use your hands. By the way, you know what the number one reason why I say that? It hurts your hands. It really does. And so be careful. First time I ever got mad and punched anybody, I found out, hey, that hurt me. I was supposed to just hurt them, but it actually hurt my hand. I was like, dang, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm not much done. Give me a glove or something to hit people with. Yes, I hit people when I was young. You don't look at me like that. Okay, so how to chastise. There's a whole list of rod of correction. What to do after chastisement. Okay, I give you five suggestions. You're going to have to determine which of those you're going to use. Okay, and then why chastisement sometimes fails to work. If it's doing it, we can talk about this another time. And then there's that addition, administering biblical chastisement, how I think it should be done, why I should think it be done, when I should think it be done, the whole thing. So all the information is there. You get to decide it. But can I tell you this? I was still, and yes, the Bible talks about spanking. Yes, the Bible talks about the blueness of the wound. And I'm all about that. I'm fine with that. But that's not my go-to first time thing. And it shouldn't be yours either. That's an act of outward rebellion where this child has not learned. This 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 7-year-old has not learned, and it's time for them to understand. Anytime you actively rebel, there are going to be consequences, and you are not going to like them. Amen? All right. Lord, we thank you for the opportunity to take some time in these last few weeks to go through these biblical principles, and I know we've kind of rushed through it really fast, and there's a lot more material, a lot more things we could say, even a lot more we could do tonight. But at the same time, Lord, I understand that in all of this, we have a responsibility as parents and grandparents, as leaders and authorities in a Sunday school class, to know how to discipline properly. And I pray that you'll help us to do that in a right way, in a God-honoring way, so that in the end, these kids grow up as children who bring honor and glory to the name of Christ. We ask in his name, amen. Two quick announcements before I dismiss you.